MechCast, Wednesday, July 17th, 2019. Hey, Mech Geeks, it's time for your MechCast, the show for Mech Geeks by Mech Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is the show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MechCast. Well, I am back and rested from my summer vacation. I had a great time out at the beach near the central coast of California. It was beautiful, relaxing. I was able to step away for a bit and really not do much because we had no Wi-Fi and really bad cell reception. So it was actually really quite nice to kind of unplug for a little bit. So if you do get a chance to do that this summer, I highly recommend it. Although I jumped right back in when I got home to having a sinus infection. Yeah, so I'm not feeling too well. We're going to try and get through this episode of the MechCast. It'll be okay. I will be fine. But consequently, things are running a little bit behind, and here we are. So, got that going on. Good news is, I think I told you a couple weeks ago, too, my 15-inch MacBook Pro had gone in for the battery recall, to get the battery swapped out. Probably the longest repair I've ever had from Apple. It did take the full 2 weeks that they said it would take. So I was without my machine. I was on my backup machine, I think, the last time I talked to you and recorded the MechCast. So that's back. The system's up and running. They didn't have to erase any of the drives, so I didn't have any data loss. Of course, you know I have plenty of backups, so I wasn't even really too worried about that. But it was nice to not have to reset up the machine. So here we are. We're back, ready to do a MechCast, and boy, do we have some great things to talk about. We're going to talk about new machines. While I was on vacation, Apple put out a couple of new Macs. We'll talk about those. We've got iPhone 11 rumors, things heating up with Apple TV Plus as well. So not a lot in the news, I guess, now that I see it. Have about three items to cover with you, and then we're going to get into some of your feedback. I have a little bit of follow-up on SSD upgrades for older Macs. I want to talk about something Apple's doing with podcasts, potentially, that I'm not too thrilled about, and I'm curious to get your opinion on. We're going to talk about family sharing accounts, and specifically how that relates to music and sharing, and why not all sharing is maybe necessarily sharing, especially when it comes to Apple. And then finally, we'll round things out with another thing of the moment, two in a row this time around. Yeah, something cool came out this past week, and I've been playing around with it, and I want to share that with you. So that's going to round out this episode of the MechCast. I don't want to waste any time jumping in. Let's get to some of the cool new announcements of hardware from Apple. And what I'm talking about, you probably have already guessed, new MacBook Pro and a new MacBook Air. We also lost a model, although I think, I don't know. I guess if you have a fondness for the MacBook, maybe this disappoints you, but I think most people recognize that the MacBook Air was kind of a more capable machine than the MacBook Pro. Unless you're talking about pure weight. It was always funny that the MacBook, the 12-inch MacBook, was a little bit lighter than the MacBook Air, but the MacBook Air had more ports, had pretty much the same performance, had the Retina display and all that fun stuff, and they did update that. Apple updated the MacBook Air, now adding True Tone to that Retina display, and also, and this is kind of the bigger part of the news, dropped the price on the entry-level model $100. So it's cheaper, better, and updated and available now. So nice little update to the MacBook Air. I already alluded to the fact that they, along with that, did stop selling the 12-inch MacBook. They took it off their site, at least for now. We've had the MacBooks go away in the past, and they came back. So we're not really sure if Apple is going to revive it at some point, but at the moment, it is no longer available. And then also with the MacBook Air update, they introduced an update to the entry level 13-inch MacBook Pro. It received a little more love. It was updated to the latest 8th generation Intel quad-core processors. They added the touch bar and the Touch ID, consequently also meaning that the MacBook Pro line now no longer has a non-touch bar model. All of the models featuring the touch bar and the Touch ID, so no more escape book like a lot of people like to refer to it, because that was the one that still had a physical escape key. That is gone, replaced with this new one. The new one does have a True Tone Retina display and an Apple T2 security chip. Excuse me. So, nice bump to the 13-inch entry-level MacBook Pro as well. And iFixit already jumped in and tore it down, tore it apart, took a look at what was changed on the inside. And there were some nice things and maybe some not so nice things, depending upon your perspective. So one nice thing is it has a bigger battery. I don't remember from the specs if it actually has a longer battery life. Of course, you've got the touch bar and the touch ID, so some extra things going on there that are probably eating up any of the little bit of extra battery that they jammed in there. But some of the bad news is that iFixit noted the SSD is now soldered down once again. Apple in the prior model, the EscapeBook, had a modular SSD. So you're not going to be able to do any kind of SSD upgrade. So if you're purchasing one of those or planning on purchasing it, make sure you get the full amount of internal storage you ever think you're going to need, because you're not going to be able to swap that out either easily or difficultly. It's just not going to happen. I guess if you're really good with soldering and desoldering, maybe you could get away with it, but I personally wouldn't try. So that was a little bit of a disappointment, but there were some other components that did go modular in this new design. So it now gains modular speakers, a modular Thunderbolt, and also a modular, what iFixit was calling Masterpiece, which is a unit that contains the headphone jack, the mic, and the Touch ID sensor. And I think that last part is the most important, because if you have a problem with your Touch ID sensor, they can now replace that without having to replace the entire logic board. So a little bit simpler repairs there. So they still gave it a 2 out of 10 for repairability. It's not something you're going to want to jump in and probably do yourself, but at least technicians might have a little bit of an easier time fixing some of the components. Both new models have Apple's latest generation butterfly keyboard design, so we didn't get a new or a return back to the scissor keyboard design with these updates. So Apple's sticking with that third generation design. And interestingly, because of that, according to 9to5Mac, they noticed that the new models, these two new models, are actually already eligible for Apple's keyboard service program. This is the one that was going to cover any issues with MacBooks that have problems with that butterfly keyboard design. So you're automatically covered. Apple did update their support article to add these two new models. So, you know, if you do have concerns about the keyboard, you're going to get taken care of if you have a problem. As far as I know, most people, at least in this community, I've asked this several times, have said we haven't seen too many issues with the third generation design. So it does have the latest design. I don't expect a lot of people to have problems. I think they're going to be small, isolated issues. So I think we're kind of past that. But there still are the rumors that at some point in the future, Apple may be returning back to the scissor design. As a matter of fact, I think we talked about on the last episode of the MacCast rumors that they are experimenting with some new redesigned scissor key designs. So those may show up in a future MacBook Pro. Along with these new MacBook Pro and MacBook Air updates, they also started up their back-to-school promotion. So if you are a student and purchase a qualifying Mac notebook, iMac, or iPad, you're going to be able to get a pair of Beats Studio 3 wireless headphones for free. So kind of a good deal there. If you're in the market for a new Mac, you're going to get some free headphones and some pretty nice ones to boot. And then finally, we still are having rumors about a possible 16-inch MacBook Pro on the horizon. It's expected to maybe arrive before the end of the year. We did talk about that quite a bit on the last episode of the MacCast, so if you missed that, go back and take a listen if you want some more of those details. But larger MacBook Pro may be on the way before the end of the year. And then possibly, with all of these announcements, as cool as they are, possibly the biggest news went quietly onto Apple's website, and you may or may not have noticed it, but the folks at MacRumors certainly did, and I think a lot of people are going to be very happy about this one. Along with these new updates, Apple has dropped the upgrade pricing on SSD storage across their Mac lineup. So if you're doing a build-to-order, a build-to-configuration option, and you're looking to increase the size of that built-in SSD storage, it's going to cost you quite a bit less. It's still not what I would call cheap. It's definitely still not as cheap as doing it after the fact yourself, if you could. And as we know, with many of Apple's models, you can't. But at least you're going to pay less for the privilege of upgrading your internal storage. In general, 1 terabyte SSD upgrades are now about $200 US less expensive. 2 terabyte SSD upgrades have dropped as much as $400. And if you're doing a whopping 4 terabyte upgrade, say on the iMac Pro, that is down $1,200 US. So some really good price drops there for Apple. Again, you're not getting into cheap territory, but at least it's going to be a less of a hit on your pocket when you're looking to gain that extra storage. Moving on to the latest iPhone 11 updates, and yeah, we are calling it the iPhone 11, at least for now. There is a big question on whether Apple will switch to using numbers versus the Roman numerals. So will it be the iPhone XI or the iPhone 11? I'm kind of leaning toward 11. I think XI looks a little bit weird when it's printed out, and I think Apple may finally just move to the straight numbers, but I'd be curious to get your thoughts on that. But this week, the site Slash Leaks posted some photos reportedly of the logic boards for the upcoming iPhone 11. Now, they didn't specify which specific model, whether that's just the iPhone 11, the iPhone 11 Max, or maybe the updated iPhone 11R. Are we going to call it the 11R or the iPhone XR version 2? I don't really know, but you get the point. We don't really know which model it was for. It could be for multiple models. It does show a more standard rectangular design. The current logic board found in the iPhone X and XS Max and XS, that one is an L-shaped logic board. The iPhone XR does have more of this rectangular design, which kind of leads to some folks and analysts thinking that this might be the logic board for the iPhone 11R, the upgrade to the XR. But the assumption is that with losing the little lower portion of the L, the horizontal piece, if this is the logic board for the update to the iPhone XS or XS Max, that what Apple might be trying to do is provide a little bit more room for the new triple lens camera system that we're assuming is going to come in the new model, and also make room for some larger batteries. And we've heard a few people mention that the next model might have a bigger battery, including one of our favorite analysts, Ming-Chi Kuo. He said that he believes the iPhone 11 will see about a 20% increase in battery capacity, the iPhone 11 Max about a 10% bump, and the updated iPhone XR, the iPhone 11R, would see a smaller increase, possibly of about 6% in battery capacity. So bigger battery is going to be a good thing, especially considering the fact that a rumored feature also of this year's iPhones would be that they're going to allow bilateral wireless charging, meaning that you'll actually be able to charge a wireless device, say like your AirPods or maybe your friend's dying iPhone, with your iPhone. So having a little bit of extra battery in there, especially if you're going to be giving away some of that juice, that would be a nice thing. And as far as the design goes, again, it's expected that the external design is going to remain largely the same. Of course, the one big exception is the big new feature of these phones that we've been talking about for a while, the triple lens camera system. Apple supposedly going to add a new wide angle lens in with the standard lens and the telephoto lens. As a matter of fact, YouTuber Marquez Brownlee showed off some supposed dummy models that had been sent out to case manufacturers. He was sent those by infamous Apple leaker Sonny Dixon. And on that video, you can get a pretty good look at potentially what the new design is going to look like. I have to tell you, that giant square cracker bump, and he even mentions this in his video, not an attractive thing. It's kind of asymmetric. It's off-center. It gets pretty close to the Apple logo. In looking at it, in my opinion, I also almost feel like the Apple logo should be moved down further away from that. So, you know, there's no real evidence that this is actually the final design, and Apple may clean it up a little bit. But for me, I really think it looks ugly on anything probably other than a black iPhone. I guess they could try to color match the color bump in some way, but then you're still going to have the lenses which are going to stick out. I think overall it's just a clunky design, and it would have been, I think, the year for Apple to go back to a flush mounted camera and not have the big ugly camera bump. I think they would have had more options. I think most of us would give up a little bit of thinness to get rid of that bump and also maybe gain, oh, I don't know, some more battery life. We've talked about this a lot, right? A lot of people would go for this, and I think overall it can make the design look better. So again, there's not anything set in stone at this point that this is the final design, but this is kind of the design we've been seeing for a while, and we've seen schematics. We're now seeing these dummy phones. It's feeling like this is the direction Apple will ultimately move into and wind up at. So, you know, I don't know. I guess like all things, you'll get used to it. Maybe with a case, it won't be so bad, but it's one of the few phones that I'm looking at going, yeah, most people are probably going to want a case on this thing. Once again, though, I'd love to get your opinions. If you've seen this, if you've seen these comps and designs, shoot me an email. Send me some feedback, maccast@gmail.com. Now, one thing that might help with this design is some other rumors that we've heard about the next generation iPhone. There has been this rumor that Apple may do a new frosted glass texture on the back, so it might not be the smooth glass. That should help maybe add some grippiness and maybe kind of tone down the design a little bit. It could look actually pretty nice. We've also heard there might be some new color options, including a green or a lavender color. And then one of my favorite rumors about a possible new change to the design is there is a rumor that Apple has been playing around with and maybe considering going back to a rainbow Apple logo, at least maybe on some special edition products. Now, it's not clear if this would be a phone or a Mac, but there's this rumor that they're playing around with bringing back the rainbow Apple logo. I'm guessing you might have to pay a price premium for it, which some people won't like, but it'll be nice to see that classic Apple logo back on some Apple products. And I might pay a little bit for that. I don't know if I'd pay much more than, you know, a handful of dollars, but I could be convinced of a lot of things with the kind of nostalgia that I have for Apple. So who am I kidding? I might pay several hundred dollars to get that on the back of my phone if it is an upgrade option. 2020 iPhones are also being talked about, and the big rumor there is we might get a smaller notch and possibly a version of the iPhone with no notch at all. Although that last one, I'm having a little bit of trouble believing, because they're saying Apple will accomplish that by adding a full screen fingerprint scanner and getting rid of Face ID. It seems unlikely to me that Apple, who has invested so much money and marketing into Face ID, claiming it to be a superior technology, a more secure technology to Touch ID, to fingerprint scanning, would go back to a fingerprint scanner. But I've seen crazier things from Apple in the past, so I wouldn't put it past them. They might even try to convince us that what they said before wasn't necessarily true, and that this new under-the-screen fingerprint technology is better than Face ID. But I won't believe it until I see it. I do believe that they're probably playing around a lot with that, but I just don't see them replacing Face ID anytime soon. And I think there's a lot of under-the-screen camera technologies being talked about and sort of in the works that would be a better direction for them to move into to get rid of that notch. And frankly, I think we're over the whole hatred of the notch, aren't we? I don't know. It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me. I was just going to say, it doesn't bother me at all. But to be honest, it never bothered me much to begin with. And I know there are people who absolutely hate the notch. I think I even hate more, though, the little, what do they call it, the pinhole or the punch hole cameras. I think those actually look uglier and more obvious to me than the notch. But again, personal choice, personal opinion. And if you have thoughts on this, shoot me some email. A Wedbush analyst, Daniel Ives, says that Apple will release third-generation AirPods in late 2019. The biggest feature being touted is water resistance. The current generation is already kind of splash-proof, I think, but this, of course, would bring more sweat and water resistance, which I think is great, especially for people who like to work out with their AirPods. He also said that they could feature some new unspecified design enhancement. Yeah, that's not vague or anything. If it's a case, though, in my opinion, if it's a case that doesn't collect, like, grungy junk under the hinge that you can't clean out, I'll rejoice on that. I think we've all run into that problem. Anybody who's owned AirPods knows what I'm talking about. Those things get grimy and they are hard to clean out, especially along that hinge and around the edge. That's the place that gives me the most trouble. So if they can change that, I'm all for that. Ming-Chi Kuo also had previously mentioned that there may be two new models of AirPods in late 2019 or early 2020. In his case, he did say that one of those models would feature a, quote, all-new form factor design and probably come at a higher price than the current second-generation AirPods. He says both new AirPod models will supposedly adopt a new system in package design, which is expected to improve the assembly yield rates, save on internal space, and also reduce manufacturing costs. So looking like we might get some new AirPods for the holidays. So if you're in the market for those and can hold off, you maybe want to wait. But I would say I have the second generation ones. I absolutely love them. I loved the first generation ones. They're just great across the board, no matter which version you get. I think there's no doubt that Apple kind of hit a home run with the AirPods. And then finally, kind of in the new product, upcoming product news, HomePod, it looks like, is going to finally make its debut in Japan. It's coming this summer, according to Gizmodo, who noticed a new order page up on Apple's Japan website. It shows a starting price for the HomePod set at 32,800 yen, which is just over $300. Apple recently reduced the price of the HomePod in the US down to 299, I think, so that seems to be in line with that. There is no exact release date given, just that it will be summer. Although with this new update to the website, it is expected that we might see HomePod in Japan in the coming weeks. So stay tuned. We'll let you know as soon as that drops. And if you happen to be in Japan and pick one up, let us know what you think about it. I've enjoyed mine. I absolutely love it. I use it quite frequently, and it just gets better and better. So I have not regretted the purchase of my HomePod. I really do. Like it, especially for like home automation, listening to music, those sorts of things. I'm hoping to see some new features too when we get the update to iOS, the next version of iOS. And I guess it's not really called, is it called HomePod OS? I'm drawing a blank right now. I can't remember. But the next update to HomePod operating system hopefully brings some killer new features as well. And then finally, in the news for this week, Apple TV Plus promotions. We're starting to see more of those as fall gets closer. They're showing off more of their new shows. I think this past week for All Mankind, they did an Apollo 11 tribute. We had the anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing, and they put a nice little tribute video up with some additional clips for All Mankind series that is going to be done by Ron Moore, the same guy that did the reboot of Battlestar Galactica, and that is looking great. That's looking like it's going to be a great show on Apple TV Plus. I'm looking forward to seeing that. And then Apple also promoted Snoopy in Space. Now, they had a Snoopy in Space short. It's actually available on Apple TV right now. It is a great little 9-minute video talking about Snoopy actually being part of the Apollo 10 program, and I won't give you any spoilers, but they have some fun with that. It's great. So check that out if you hadn't gotten an opportunity to see that. But then also this past week, they released a trailer showing that Snoopy in Space is actually going to be a new series on Apple TV Plus this fall. So the Peanuts are coming to Apple TV Plus as well, which, again, I love the Peanuts, grew up with them, super excited to see that coming to Apple TV+. And then we're also starting to get rumors now about what some of the second wave shows might be that could appear in 2020. So we kind of know a lot about the fall lineup for Apple TV. Apple showed a lot of those shows, or mentioned a lot of those shows during their Apple TV Plus announcement back in the spring. And now we're starting to hear rumors about what new shows might show up on Apple TV Plus in 2020. And this week we heard about a BBC collaboration with Apple. They're reportedly partnering on an 8-episode comedy series starring Imelda Staunton, who you might know as Dolores Umbridge from the Harry Potter movies if you're in the U.S. If you're in the U.K., I'm sure you know many other things that she starred in. She is a fun actress. I really enjoyed her role in Harry Potter, and so I'm looking forward to seeing what they do with this. The working title of the show is called Alabama, and it is supposedly already in production with director Jim O'Hanlon and writer Andy Walton. It is being produced by the comedy chief at BBC Studios, Chris Sussman. So, first new show we're hearing about for the 2020 lineup of Apple TV Plus. Not a lot of details other than the fact that it's a new comedy show and it's called Alabama. So, don't know what it's about. Sounds like it would be set in the U.S., which is interesting considering it's coming from the BBC. So, looking forward to hearing more about that in the near future. But with that, that is going to do it for the news for this week. Before we move on, I do want to take a quick moment and thank a show sponsor, and that is Linode. Hey, if you're looking to set up a website, get a server together, Linode is a great choice because they give you all kinds of options with how you want to build and set up your Linode server. They allow you to instantly deploy and manage an SSD server through their Linux, through their Linode cloud, and you can get a server up and running literally in seconds with your choice of Linux distributions. And best of all, they're giving all new Maccast customers a $20 credit. So if you've been wanting to set up a server, check out Linode. They have a whole bunch of Linux distributions. Basically, if it runs on Linux, you can run it on Linode. Most Linux distributions are available right out of the box, but if you don't like their options, you can upload custom images and create your own server. And that is really one of the things that I think sets Linode apart, is you have all kinds of choices on how you want to build out your server, what you want to run on it, and they make it easy to manage and configure all of that through their control panel. And it really is a great control panel. They have native SSD storage on all of their boxes, a 40 gigabit network, and they use industry-leading processors. And you can also pick the location for your Linode. They have 10 worldwide data centers. As a matter of fact, they just opened their newest one in Toronto, Canada, and it is built with their latest up-to-date hardware and their next-generation network backbone. What's cool about that is it allows users to comply with in-country data protection requirements while taking advantage of all of Linode's technologies and tools. And they're going to be opening up a new data center in Mumbai, India, by the end of 2019. And also, pricing with Linode, super simple, no surprise fees. You pay what you want. They use hourly billing across all of their plans and with their add-on services, so you can get the server you need for as little as $5 a month with their Nanode plans, all the way up to high-powered dedicated CPU plans. So they got you covered across the board, and like I said, their dashboard makes it easy to manage your Linode and upgrade your plan when you need to. So if you need to change it, super simple. If you need to add on backups, large storage volumes, load balancing, yep, they got you covered there. You can do all of that. And best of all, when you need support, they have live 24/7 customer support, along with a large documentation library that provides a great resource when you get stuck. So visit linode.com/mattcast to set up your first Linode and get a $20 credit when you use the promo code MACCAST2019. That's linode.com. linode.com/maccast to set up your first Linode, and be sure to use maccast2019 to get your $20 credit. And a huge thank you to Linode for their support of the Maccast. We've been talking on the show quite a bit lately about the massive advantages of updating your aging Macs with solid state drives. I have become a convert. I am a person who originally, and a while back, well, quite a while back now, thought that the RAM upgrade, was one of the best upgrades you could do to your Mac. This day and age, with SSDs becoming so much more affordable and more options available out there, I am thoroughly convinced that if you have an old Mac and it's running slow, if your Mac life has become a bad day at the beach, meaning it's beach ball city, the best remedy outside of buying a new Mac with an SSD is upgrading your old Mac with a spinning hard drive to an SSD. And we don't need to beat that dead horse because we've talked about it so much. But I did mention, I think, on the last episode of the MacCast, or a previous episode, that, you know, if you don't feel comfortable installing an SSD yourself, because there's some great guides out there from places like OWC at MacSales.com or iFixit at iFixit.com that pretty much walk you through the process of how to upgrade almost any Mac model with an SSD. But, you know, it can be daunting and it can be a little bit scary. So if you're not comfortable, the good news is that there's a lot of friendly neighborhood Apple authorized repair centers that should be able to help you out. And I mentioned this on the last episode of MacCast. Of course, they're going to charge you a fee, but it's probably going to be a pretty reasonable fee, especially considering the fact that you're going to get a huge performance bump. So you might take a Mac that you're feeling like is ready for the scrap pile and give it another, and I'm not exaggerating here, another 2-3 years of life, probably. I'm still on a 2015 MacBook Pro with an SSD, and I don't see replacing it anytime soon. And we did the SSD upgrade in our 2014 Mac Mini. Oh my gosh, that's like night and day on that model. And we won't be replacing that anytime soon either. And here it is, already 5 years in use. So I'm expecting to get another year or two out of that. And that SSD upgrade was like $100. So well worth it. But point is I brought up the fact that, hey, if you're not comfortable doing it, try an Apple authorized repair center. And John tried to follow my advice. And I say tried to because when he went and took his 2015 27-inch iMac to his Apple authorized repair center in Nashville, he said, hey, I want you to swap out the Fusion drive that's in here with an SSD. They basically told him nope, or at least discouraged him from it, saying, nah, that's really going to be problematic because it's a fusion drive system. And the way the system treats the fusion drive, yeah, we don't really advise doing that upgrade. So they discouraged him from doing the upgrade, which was surprising for me to hear. I didn't expect that to happen. And he emailed me asking if I had ever heard of that before. Now, I don't know a lot of people who have upgraded a Fusion Drive iMac with an SSD, but I do know that it is definitely possible. I also do know that, yeah, there is a small complication that makes it maybe a little bit more difficult to deal with, but really not that difficult. So I was surprised to hear an Apple Authorized Repair Center saying that. And, you know, not to knock this repair center, John, but frankly, if they're not comfortable doing that kind of an upgrade, I'd be a little bit concerned about, you know, other work that they might do. You know, maybe it was just an off day. Maybe it was just one guy that you got that day. Who really knows what the details are? But you should be able to upgrade a Fusion Drive iMac with an SSD without too much issue. And so I thought I'd explain what I think is problematic and how you might go about getting around that. Maybe you can talk to them and explain this to them, and maybe it won't be so scary. So the thing that I think they're calling problematic is that your Fusion Drive iMac actually has two distinct hard drives in it. It has the standard spinning hard drive, the HDD, and then it also has a 128 gigabyte SSD in there. And what the operating system does is basically fuses those, or, you know, fusions those together into a single virtual volume. So on your Mac, all you see is one thing, but it's really actually two separate devices. And that's the thing that they're talking about as being problematic, because if you simply just went into the iMac and replaced the hard drive, the spinning hard drive, with a shiny new SSD and then turn it back on, the operating system would promptly try to fuse your now two SSD drives together into a single volume. And I probably should have done some research on this. I don't even know if that would be much of a problem, but it's probably not what you want. And so really, to do the upgrade in a Fusion Drive iMac, what you want to do is you want to start by taking the extra step of breaking apart that Fusion set, basically breaking those drives back into two separate drives. And unfortunately, that's not something you can simply do with like Disk Utility. It's not just like reformatting the drives. You have to actually take some extra steps. But like I said, it's really not that hard. There's some simple terminal commands, I think three of them, that you need to run to do it. You can find the information pretty easily online on how to break that Fusion Drive apart. And the only thing to know is that running those commands will actually completely destroy and erase the existing data on your Fusion Drive, meaning both volumes. They're going to get erased and kind of reset up as individual drives. And through that process, any data that's on them is going to be completely wiped out. So obviously, before you want to do this, you want to make sure that you have a full backup, and you're going to want to make sure that you have an operating system install disk ready. So like a USB thumb drive with an operating system on it, because you're going to have to reinstall the OS. You're not going to have the recovery partition. But outside of that, it should be pretty straightforward. So you break apart the drives, you swap out the hard drive for an SSD, and you reinstall the operating system, and then restore your from your backup your system, and you should be good to go. That should be it. So again, a little more difficult, but not impossible. And the good news is that after you go through that process, you'll have the new internal SSD drive that you upgraded to, but you also get this extra 128 gigabyte internal SSD volume that you can use as well. So you get some additional storage out of the whole deal, and you're going to have a faster Mac to boot, and it's probably going to last you for a few years longer. So I still think it's a good deal. Don't know why that particular Apple authorized repair center felt it was going to be too tricky to do, but maybe go back and share this information with them, see if they're more willing to do the upgrade. And if not, maybe check the Yellow Pages. Those still exist. Go online, look around and see if you can find another local Apple authorized repair center that's maybe more amicable to doing that SSD upgrade for you. Because I do think it's still a very worthwhile upgrade if you can get it done. So good luck with that, and let us know how it turns out. There was a bit of Apple-related podcast news this week, and I didn't cover this in the news section because I actually wanted to do some commentary on it. Because being a podcaster, I have a little bit of a strong opinion about this, and I really wanted to throw it out to you in the community, the podcast listeners, because I would presume, being podcast listeners, that you're into podcasts and you have a passion and a place in your heart for podcasts. And I'm curious to get your take on how you feel about this announcement as well. And what I'm talking about is there's a rumor. In its early stage, it appears like Apple is just kind of putting the feelers out there, but Apple is asking around, trying to find out if there's some interest in podcasters or podcasts, and I don't know which ones, I don't know who they're talking to, doing original exclusive podcast content for Apple. So in other words, a podcast that you could only get through some sort of Apple technology. And again, we don't know how this would be distributed. I would presume it would be through Apple's podcast app, but I guess it could also potentially be through iTunes. And a little bit of this is in response to some of the posturing, I think, and things that Spotify has been doing. You may or may not be aware, Spotify does podcasts. You can actually get this podcast on Spotify. But they also are, they bought Anchor, the podcast production and hosting software company, and also bought Gimlet Media, which is the creators, they're the creators and makers of some really great podcasts. A couple of my favorites, as a matter of fact, Reply All and Startup. They've done some other great shows, and it's a really great podcast network. But the concern is, and Spotify has been pretty clear about this, when they bought Gimlet Media, Gimlet came out and said, hey, none of our existing shows are going to change. You're still going to be able to get them everywhere. But new content, new shows, we don't know yet. We're going to be playing around with some things. And really, the implication is that they're going to do exclusive podcast content, Gimlet, that is going to be available maybe only on Spotify, which, in my opinion, sucks. And the idea that Apple would be considering doing the same thing, I think, sucks. Just not good. I think it's bad for all of us in a lot of ways. When I asked in 2007, I did a podcast event with a bunch of podcasters in the early days, and I asked about the future of podcasting. Leo Laporte, at that time, expressed concerns about Apple and iTunes having too much control over podcasting and sort of placement of podcasting, and he was really looking for others like Microsoft at the time to bring podcasting to the Windows desktop. And those sorts of things. And here we are, you know, what's this, 12 years later, and honestly, not much has changed. So a little bit, we can get podcasts on Spotify now. We have some other options for getting podcast content. But really, iTunes and Apple, they're still really the big juggernaut. Something like it's estimated 50 to 70% of people get their podcasts through Apple. And we're starting to see the early stages of this idea of podcast content becoming, in a lot of ways, like some of the streaming content we're seeing now, where everybody's sort of circling the wagons, potentially, and siloing up and trying to get people over to their quote-unquote network. And I don't know if we call this Apple thing a network. Again, they haven't done anything yet. They're just talking about this. But I have concerns about this. And this is what I wanted to share with you and get your opinions on. And as I was thinking about this and writing up the notes, so this was my initial reaction. I'm like, this sucks. I do not want to see podcasts being siloed. I don't want to be told where I have to go to get my favorite shows. I don't want to have to go over Spotify to get this show and to Apple to get that show and to Microsoft to get that show or to Android, you know, whatever to get that show. In the same way as I'm really frustrated with the streaming services, you know, sort of NBC pulling their shows into their network and WB doing their own thing and Apple doing their own thing and Amazon and Netflix and Hulu and Disney and on and on and on and on till I have to go to 27 different places to get my content. Now, you're going to have aggregators, things like Apple TV and maybe a podcast app and all that stuff that might work, but at a certain point, there's certain services that are not going to want to play with each other, right? We've been down these roads before, and it's infinitely frustrating, especially when you're just a consumer of content and you just want to get your content in a quick and easy way, right? I don't think this is good. I also don't think this is good for podcasters because I don't want to silo my audience. I don't want to limit my reach. I don't want to limit who can get my show, and of course, I'm probably not going to be asked by Apple to come exclusive on their network. We're talking about probably much bigger shows than mine and much bigger names and, you know, more famous people and those sorts of things, but that's still frustrating. I think it's just an overall trend that I don't like. And so as I was writing up this for the podcast, I did start to think through some things, though, too, because I started to think, well, this is all maybe a little bit silly, because maybe really what's happening is we're just kind of blurring the lines between what is a podcast and what is a radio program. And I'm thinking about things like Beats One, right? Apple has radio shows on Beats One that are exclusive to Apple, right? You have to get them through Apple Music. You have to, you know, that's how you consume that content. And so what if these exclusive shows were simply talk radio shows on Beats One? Would I feel the same way about those as Apple calling them podcasts, exclusive Apple podcasts, right? And the only way I could get that podcast is through Apple Music. And I was thinking, yeah, I do see those two things as different things, but are they really? And I think when it comes down to it, maybe not. So maybe I'm overreacting here. I don't know. It just seems like a really bad way to kind of, you know, break these podcasts up. And, you know, again, where is this content going to live? Is it going to live in iTunes or the music app? Is it going to live inside the podcast app? Am I going to have multiple podcast apps for my different podcasts I want to listen to from different platforms? And that's the kind of world that I don't want to get to. I don't want to have Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Hulu Podcasts and Amazon Podcasts. And, you know, I don't want to have 10 apps to listen to the shows that I want to listen to. I want to have the one thing like we have today. And maybe that's just me being an old fogey. I don't really know. I also don't like this idea of any one of these services, including Apple, sort of having the power to decide what gets kind of promoted or pushed to the forefront. And obviously, Apple is going to push their own shows to the forefront of the podcast app if that's what they start to do. And we've already dealt with this in other areas within Apple's ecosystem, including actually the current podcast thing. So maybe this isn't all that different as well, right? Apple kind of maintains the keys. And this is the thing that Leo Laporte was responding to in 2007, right? Apple is in charge of the fate of what shows up on the podcast page inside iTunes when you go there. And certain shows bubble to the surface and certain shows will never show up there. And, you know, it's not this level playing field. I don't know if that's ever a thing that could happen. And I was never really concerned about that. Now, I say that being a podcaster who's had the advantage of being featured in Apple's ecosystem. So, you know, I am fully willing to admit that I don't have the same perspective of maybe a more struggling podcaster. I had the advantage of being in podcasting early, establishing a show when there wasn't a lot of other shows around, and learning and growing and gaining. And you know, I think I'm deserving of the position that I have, but I had to work hard to get here, but I am fully cognizant of the fact that it was easier for me in a lot of ways because I was in earlier. It's much, much harder these days, and I can fully understand how it's frustrating when you do great content, and you put together a great show, and you build a great community, and you build a great audience, and you don't get recognition from that because some other bigger name or, you know, just someone at Apple either hasn't noticed you or maybe doesn't like you for some reason or whatever those things might be. And those all factor in. And sort of having this siloed content and having exclusive content, this makes all this stuff harder. And so those are things that I am concerned about when I start reading stories like this. So I don't know. You know, am I totally crazy? Am I confused? Am I maybe a little bit of both? I think overall, if this is the direction that we move in with podcasts, where, you know, things are siloed into their own podcast networks and their own podcast apps, and it feels like we're going back to something that we had a long time ago. It feels like a huge step backwards to me and not this big open thing that podcasting was meant to be. The revolution of podcasting was it was open and available to everybody. It was democratized. The directory back in the early days, there wasn't even a unified directory before iTunes, and that was probably a better thing. Adam Curry set up this shared directory, and different people maintained different nodes. As a matter of fact, I maintained like the technology operating system node. So if you had a podcast that was related to operating systems, you know, Windows, Macintosh, Palm OS, whatever it was at the time, you would submit your podcast to me and I would add it to the directory, and then all the directories were linked through an OPML file, and that's how everything worked. And I think when iTunes came around, they just sucked in that giant directory and then sort of started adding onto it. And then Apple became the de facto central repository for the podcast directory. And that's a lot of power, right? It went from being democratized to a single point. And moving more in that direction just feels and seems out of the spirit of podcasting to me and wrong. So maybe it's because I've been in this so long that this just feels bad to me. Maybe I'm an old fogey and just, you know, the old guy crying that, you know, the kids are trampling over my lawn. I don't really know. I'd love to get your opinion on this. I kind of shared mine. Shoot me some feedback. Send me an email, maccast@gmail.com. So when is sharing not really sharing? Maybe when you're using family sharing with Apple Music. And what I'm talking about here is that when you want to set up your family on an Apple Music family share plan and then share it, you're not really sharing everything in the way that maybe you're thinking about. If you have a large music library and it's a ripped music library and you want to share that over iCloud Music Library, yeah, that's not really going to get shared with your shared family music plan. And that's confusing, right? You're using that word sharing, and there's many things that you can't share. And this is something that Ryan discovered, unfortunately, this past week, and kind of had to learn the hard way. He emailed me and was confused about this a little bit. And so I wanted to bring it up on the podcast because I think a lot of people get confused by this. What he did was he switched from a single Apple Music subscription to a family Apple Music subscription in the hopes that his wife could pull up his music library on her phone using her Apple ID. And, you know, a few of you probably know that's not how this works. And that's sort of what Ryan discovered. His personal library is a mix of ripped music, purchased music, and stuff downloaded from Apple Music, so Apple Music content. And his wife could get, of course, access to the Apple Music content, but getting access to the purchased music and the ripped music, that really wasn't working, and they couldn't find a way to do it. And that's because Ryan, you know, as we talked about, as you found out, ripped music isn't really shared. And this is where I think the definition of sharing gets confusing, because you're on a shared Apple Music plan, right? I guess Apple doesn't really call it shared, right? They call it family plan. Or is it family share? I'd have to go look on their website now. Now I'm getting confused. But the point is like, you have a family plan, you would expect that if I have music that's in my library, anybody else in my family probably can listen to that music that's in my library. And it's not that simple, unfortunately. It doesn't work that way. The family sharing plan is a shared plan in terms of the billing account, right? You get to pay for everything, but you can't share your music library, your playlists, or your Apple Music playlists or songs really with anyone else in that family plan. The way it works is each family member has their own music, their own playlists, their own account, right? It's all tied into their account. And so the exception to that is anything that's in Apple Music, of course, they have access to, but they're not going to have access to family playlists. They're also going to be able to have access to your iTunes purchases, your iTunes purchased music, but they will need to download that into their own iTunes libraries. So your family members can go into the purchases section inside iTunes, and you can see all of the family member accounts, and you can go into those accounts and you can see the music that that family member has purchased. So your wife can go into your account, she can go into your purchases, she can see everything that you purchased on iTunes, and she could download all of that stuff into her own iTunes library and listen to it. And then it does become part of her library. So it can be shared in that way, but it's actually copied into her library. She has a copy, you have a copy. And it's not like you can just stream it. Now, I did kind of find an exception to that. If she downloads it into her music library on her Mac and then uses iCloud Music Library, that will allow you to then stream that music from the cloud, but it needs to be in a library to start with, in one of her libraries to start with. And like I said, I would do it probably on the Mac, because if you put it in the library on your iPhone, if you want to delete that track to free up space, it deletes it from all other devices and all other places. Whereas with your Mac, it doesn't work like that. You can leave it on your Mac. Well, I take that back. It would work like that, except most of us have enough storage on our Mac and in our iTunes libraries on our Macs that we can keep that music there, and it's not really going to become a problem, right? So the music has to be downloaded and in one of her libraries to be shared through iCloud Music Library, and the music does have to be in her own library. So by the same token, anything that you ripped locally into your library, you're going to have to copy into her library to make it available to her. You can't just share it out of your library very easily. Now, some people are probably going to email me and say the one exception is that you can use home sharing locally on your network at home, and you can share your library across the network between your Macs. And I think your iOS devices, but it's only going to work locally on, you know, when you're at home on the same Wi-Fi network. It's not going to work through the cloud. To work through the cloud, you have to use the iCloud Music Library. And again, iCloud Music Libraries are tied to the iCloud account and not to the family share account. Hopefully this is all being clear. Like I said, it can be very confusing, and I can understand why people can get confused. So, you know, there you have it. That's kind of when sharing is not really sharing. And that's why I think in some cases, a lot of people just decide, nope, you know what I'm going to do? The kind of sharing I'm going to do, I'm going to have one account, one iCloud account, and I'm just going to let everybody log into that account. And then it's just all quote unquote shared. I prefer actually having it the other way. I love my family account, especially as iCloud gets more and more features. We like to have our content separated, because the problem when you start sharing an iCloud account is that you're sharing all parts of that iCloud account with everybody in the family. So that means calendars, contacts, and everything starts to get muddied up and cluttered and mixed together. and stuff like that. And the unfortunate thing is, I think in some cases we do want that. In the case of maybe music and photos, right? It'd be great also to, you know, because this doesn't work for photo libraries either. It'd be great if you had one big family shared photo library that everybody could just dump their stuff into and everybody in the family has access to all those photos. Doesn't work that way. Each family member, each iCloud account has their own photo library. And of course, there are ways to share those photos just in the same way there's ways to share certain tracks of music, but you kind of have to duplicate them across those accounts. And so then you have duplicates in multiple accounts. Yes, they're separate people's accounts, but they're still duplicates within a family, which gets a little bit frustrating. And then you have the areas where, again, like contacts and calendars and email and all those other things where you probably do want to have separate data and separate accounts. But Apple hasn't solved that problem for us. I'm still hoping for, again, for photos and music, the day when Apple figures this out and figures out that families want to be able to just share streaming music no matter where it comes from. So if my daughters were to rip a CD into their Mac and put it into their shared family music account, that everybody in the family would have access to that music. But unfortunately today, that's not the way it works. So hopefully this little conversation clears things up a little bit. I don't think it solves any problems, but maybe at least lets you know the kinds of challenges you're facing when you're trying to use family sharing and sharing music and photos and stuff like that. If you have additional questions, of course, email me, maccast@gmail.com. All right, let's finish up today with a thing of the moment. Cool thing happened this past week. You may or may not remember back in 2006, all the way back then, Apple launched games on the iPod, and one of their first games for the iPod was a really cool poker game called Texas Hold'em. It had great animations, and it was a lot of fun to play. It worked really great with the click wheel. I loved playing that game. Unfortunately, in 2011, Apple stopped selling it. You couldn't get it on the App Store anymore. I might still have a copy on an old iPod. I'm going to have to maybe pull that out and see if that game is still on there. I'm going to guess that it is. So it'd be great to go back and play the old game. But the good news is that this week, for the 10th anniversary of the App Store, Apple released an update to Texas Hold'em. Texas Hold'em 2.0 is available. They completely redesigned it, updated it. They have 24 opponents on there now, 10 different locations that you can check out. They added a Wi-Fi multiplayer option. So if you have multiple people with the app, you can play against each other, up to 8 players in Wi-Fi mode. All kinds of new animations and videos and reactions and stuff like that. It looks really, really great. There is a animation as you're like rotating between players, you're kind of going around the table. I did find that a little bit distracting, but discovered that if you go from portrait to landscape mode, you can switch to more of a top-down view that doesn't have all of that animation. So if that bothers you, you can also tap through the animations so you don't have to sit through them, because it does kind of slow down the gameplay. But overall, the gameplay is exactly as it always was. It's kind of a Texas Hold'em poker tournament. There's several levels that you have to work through, and you have to kind of start at the novice level, get some winnings, earn some money so that you can do a buy-in for the next higher level, and you can kind of work your way up. It's a nice, great casual game, fun to play. If you don't know how to play, there's some great tips and tricks and information in the app to kind of teach you how to play Texas Hold'em. And I just absolutely love it. I think it's great. It's a lot of fun, and it's completely free. Another possible downside is that it is pretty large. It kind of has a lot of video files in it, which is why I think it's so large. It's about a 1.5 gigabyte download. So if you're tight on storage, that might be a bit of a problem. And for the kind of simplistic game it is, that is kind of pretty crazy that it's that big. You think they could optimize it a little bit more, but maybe high resolution video. I don't really know. It's pretty tiny on the screen. So why it's that big baffles me a little bit, but that's probably my only complaint. So it's fun, it's free, and available now. Apple Texas Hold'em. It's got great nostalgia behind it, especially if you played the original iPod game. Go out and grab it and have a lot of fun. But with that, that is going to do it for this episode of the MacCast. Before I leave you, I do want to thank a show sponsor, and that is Smile, makers of Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disc Label, also Text Expander for iPhone and iPad, along with PDF Pen for iOS and PDF Pen Scan Plus. You can get more information and details on all of their great applications by visiting smilesoftware.com/podcast. Bandwidth for the MacCast is provided by CashFly. You can find them at cachefly.com. And all advertising on the MacCast is handled by Backbeat Media. You can find them at backbeatmedia.com. As always, I love hearing from you. If you have a comment, a question, something you would like to hear covered on a future episode of the MacCast, you can send your emails and audio comments to maccast@gmail.com. You can also call in on the listener hotline and leave a voicemail. That phone number, 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. If you need show notes, links to anything that I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast, you'll find those on the website. That's at maccast.com. And finally, if you want to follow me on social media, you can find me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or you can check out the MacCast Facebook page over at facebook.com/TheMacCast. But that will do it for now. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.